JG3
Number 9A.
All right, so therefore we can see that this is a principle. Gosh, it's such a beautiful exact expression. And she says the evidence of the immortality of man and the cosmos, you see, it's all under that same law, logos, creativity, the universe, including man, including nature, as we saw. And therefore is sustained by the intelligent principle, she says, love. So she's showing here that that principle is love. Therefore, the downward causation. We say, why does it spiral downward? Why the control hierarchy? Well, because it's a principle that it's love. Love is that term that will not allow for anything not to be at one with God. We know then on the level of divine science that principle and its idea is one, and this one is principle, and that principle is love. And love, as we know through our study of the synonymous terms, talks about one's inseparable union with the principle, the all in all. So therefore, the reason that infinite principle looks like a downward causation, reducing itself to human apprehension. It comes as principle, presents what it is as idea. Downward, the first translation. It retranslates through the first degree to the second degree to the third degree out everything that isn't like that principle, as we see on the diagram. Therefore, again, another symbol on the overhead projector. We can have different ways of symbolizing this, but this one we can see that I've done through circles. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 concentric circles here for the tape audience. You see around the first circle outside is white. That's that white light of God we know. Then the next science itself, or then the next level of divine science, we could symbolize like a principle that is love that is causing then the downward causation and the upward causation. And we have that in our 23rd Psalm, which we love at this point because we know in Science and Health on page 578-4 that this is the whole end of her textbook, really, where Mrs. Eddy in the Apocalypse ends by showing, well, the whole reason that everything that has gone on is then for this principle that is love, and because that principle wants to have everything united with the principle, it therefore gives that 23rd Psalm. And she shows it then that this is why the whole system's going on, because instead of Lord, she says divine love. And then we have Max's wonderful epitome from the epitome book, where he shows that on the Christian Science level, where divine love has met and always shall meet every human need, that love is that incorporeal spiritual sense of deity, demonstrates love's perfection in the human experience. And it's here then the purpose of the system, as we know then that divine love is mind, is my shepherd, I shall not want, mind guides, love is spirit, love maketh me to lie down in green pastures, love leadeth me beside the still waters, spirit feeds and clothes, love as soul. Love restoreth my soul or spiritual sense. Soul restores. Love is principle. Love leadeth me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake, not our name's sake. Principle demonstrates itself, what it wants to demonstrate. Love is life. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for love is with me. Love's rod and love's staff, they comfort me. Love is life. Life leads to deathless life. And love is truth. Love prepareth a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Love anoints my head with oil, my cup runneth over. It is love's truth consciousness that saves. And then love as mine, and of course this love is a capital L. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I'll dwell in the consciousness of capital love forever. Love bestows infinite good. Now you see, this is important to see that the divine principle, love, is behind everything. But what is love trying to bring out? As I said, it's oneness. But it's our oneness with principle. What is that one with principle? Our qualities, our nature is that one with principle, not our intellect. I think it's so interesting to see that in Max Kapler's book on animal magnetism unmasked, he makes it very clear that we're not studying just a mind science without spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Because as he shows that the animal magnetism takes place not in mental influence, because we can quickly change our intellect and say all sorts of things that we want to say. But animal magnetism takes place in the nature of what we are. That's why it's animals, poor animals, as I said, some of them, their behavior often at times are better than the way humans behave. But it's a symbol. So this animal stands for the nature of man, the animal nature of man. And that what has to change is the nature of man. And that nature really is what constitutes the values of our consciousness. Is our nature on the first degree of the physical, of depravity, self-justification, all those depraved qualities of the first degree, you see? Or is our consciousness, Adam, where art thou? Is our consciousness based on the more compassionate human qualities of the second degree? Or is our consciousness based on the spiritual qualities of wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, and holiness? It's nature, not thinking. We know we can trick people anytime with what we say. It's what we are. And so often that, we've heard that it is, I think it was Mrs. Eddy or along the line anyhow, where it shows that we heal. Jesus healed by not what he said, but by what he was. And that John Dorley said Jesus could have said anything. He could have said to the person he was healing, get out of the room, and he'd have been healed. He was healed by what he was and not what he was saying. So that's where it says, beware of false prophets. People can say anything they want. It's our nature that has to change. That is not easy, is it? We can say something and go on, but to let the principle God change our nature, this is where Mrs. Eddy said, the warfare with oneself is grand. Very, very difficult. And this is why one can see it's taken thousands and thousands of years for the nature of man to change. And then we look out at what goes on in the world. For example, at this particular time in 1995, we say, is there no progress? Within the world, the Klan fighting that still goes on, the brutal murders in the name of God, in the name of one's own virtual realm. But there is progress because principle love is behind and it will not let any stone be unturned. They shall all know me from the least of them to the greatest of them. Everywhere the Christ idea will ground to powder the nature of man. And that is why the system is operating. So we see then that so many leaders today have called out, and we can just keep the lights where they are, for a system of values. And so many of them have shown then that the hard currency of today are values, not money. And therefore, we've known this. We know we have a science of ideas. Often people look at our system and say, Well, you're studying ideas, and you're trying to relate yourself with the ideas of mind and the ideas of spirit and the ideas of soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Well, what a waste of time. I'm not here to make my $1 million, you see. I'll go do something else. This is not hard currency. It's much better to make $1 million and have it in the bank than to spend time building up a consciousness of ideas. What does it get you? But they see today that the hard currency now is in values. Now, this is interesting, as I've shown before this, and I like to show it again because I think it's so good. We know now, and I've quoted a bit in a few classes lately, that this article in Business Ethics, really, which is a magazine that comes out on social responsibility in business, Volume 6, Number 2, March, April, 1992. Willis Harmon was interviewed on the role of business in the global transformation, and on page 28 in that particular magazine, we love what Harmon says. Until I find something else, I just use it as a nice beacon from someone in the world. Willis Harmon is, as we know now, the president of the Institute of Noetic Science. This was an institute that began by Edgar Mitchell, one of the astronauts, and noetic means mind science. And he is one of those in the world that is responding to as high as he can to these laws of God and to what he feels is higher. And so Mitchell began this institute, of which we have Willis Harmon now president. Harmon, we know as an electrical engineering professor who spent 16 years at Stanford Research Institute, which is now the SRI International. But they were interviewing Harmon, and I'll just take out a few points, but it points out why the system operates and how the world is beginning to get closer to valuing what we have to give in the science of Christian Science, based, of course, on Mrs. Eddy's revelation and textbook. Harmon says, I began to sense that somehow one had to deal with two big issues. What is the picture of reality that underlies the whole system? And if business is the engine that creates the future, how does business learn to conform to a totally different picture of reality? The interviewer says, in your book, Global Mind Change, you talk about a shift from a worldview that sees physical reality as primary to one that sees mind as primary, that sees mind as that which gives rise to physical reality. Harmon says, at the level of economics, I would put the shift this way, that we are moving from a society in which economics is dominant to one in which values and purpose are more important. Economics and technology are only the means you use to achieve certain goals, and we've lost track of the goals. We've become totally fascinated with technological advance and economic growth without any sense of where it's going. We have to learn to put back meaning, values, purpose, everything that makes human life human. He says the most fundamental premise is that the subjective, the mind, consciousness, spirit is the cause of everything, and objective reality is the effect. That if values and consciousness are the primal reality, then how do we manage an organization and what to its end? He says here, therefore, that it's a picture of the world in which creativity, intuition, values, aesthetic sense, and spiritual sense are realities. He said, we are moving from separateness to wholeness, and the locus of authority is shifting from the expert, who we don't trust anymore, to an inner authority. Control in organizations is not top-down hierarchical anymore, and organizations are getting to be more like an organism of autonomous units, united in a common purpose, but not controlled from one place. He says that This is a great evolutionary leap that is happening towards a holistic view of things, towards a balancing of outer action and inner looking. And this is so important. He says, it involves a different relationship with nature. It certainly involves a new sense of spirituality, very different from the old religious religions, a spirituality in action. The corporation and the schools will be amongst the most spiritual institutions. Isn't that interesting? And certainly that is what Mrs. Eddy hoped, that spiritual education would get into the schools, and as he said, here even into the business, that the corporations and the schools will be amongst the most spiritual institutions. Built on what? On a system of values. And we see, therefore, that Mrs. Eddy, in talking about the language of spirit in the sixth chapter, when he really listens to what that language of spirit is doing. In the sixth chapter, it's always, we know now under the crisis of Christ principle, presenting what it is and taking away what it isn't. This is the main spirit tone in the chapter. Why the language of spirit? What's the purpose of the language of spirit? She says here, under spirit, the new language of spirit leavens the material sense of nature and of natural law and translates them back into the nature of spirit. As mind, the language of spirit is a new tongue. It has a spiritual, not a mortal, physical, or human meaning. As spirit, spirit of spirit, the pure language of spirit speaks through parables, miracles, and the final triumph over death. Spirit is soul. The five physical senses are too opaque to transmit the language of spirit. Spirit is principle. The science of Christ and its spiritual interpretations is the leaven of spirit that leavens all doctrines. Spirit is life. The spiritual leaven of spirit, though hidden in sacred secrecy, is ever at work to destroy the entire mass of error. Spirit is truth. The leaven of spirit changes the whole of mortal thought. Spirit is love. God and nature are one, good and spiritual. Mortals alone regard God as the creator of matter and of evil. Do you hear what it's saying? What is the language of spirit doing? It's leavening the material sense of nature and natural law and translating them, what, back into the intellect of spirit? No, into the nature of spirit. Therefore, it's doing that by changing the whole of mortal thought, because that's where the problem lies, in a immortal thought, in mortal mind, in a looking at the pattern of God through reversal. And the outcome of a spirit is love. The outcome is oneness, love. God and nature are one, good and spiritual. The whole purpose of the system is to bring out the qualities of being good. And in the world today, that Paul Davies looks at the laws and says, you know, I think maybe the only reason these laws are operating are to express goodness and beauty and symmetry. And that's and that they are all omnipotent, omnipresent, omni-action, and all science. Defining laws just as Mrs. Eddy would. But the main thing, I was just awestruck when he said the purpose of the law is to express goodness. I mean, this is exactly what Mrs. Eddy's saying. The law isn't to bring more money to the universe or to make the financial-based stock market more prosperous. The purpose it's working for in economics and in business and everything is to just express plain goodness. And, you know, I'm just really impressed where she says in Miscellaneous Writings on 110:21, she says, we may well unite in the thanksgiving for the continued progress and unprecedented prosperity of our cause. It is already obvious that the world's acceptance and the momentum of Christian science increased rapidly as years glide on. As Christian Scientists, you have dared the perilous defense of truth and have succeeded. You have learned how fleeting is that which men call great and how permanent that which God calls good. You have proven that the greatest piety is scarcely sufficient to demonstrate what you have adopted and taught, that your work well done with dignified angels. How many of us think that we're here to be great? When she says we're here, not to be, how fleeting it is, that which men call great, and how permanent that which God calls good. It's a work well done. It doesn't matter what we have been, a CEO or a recycler. Work out your own salvation. Occupy till I come. As long as we do the work we do with the qualities of goodness, that is the purpose of the system, not to be great. And how, what happens in the world today? The competition, the jealousy within corporations, within businesses, within individuals, to be great. It's just, it's missing the mark. If that's why Jesus was humble, and he knew it was missing the mark to be great. And when they came up to him and said, oh, good master, he says, don't call me good, call God good. But they say he was the most humblest man on earth. He wasn't here to prove greatness. And you know, that was part of his crucifixion when they wanted him to be great. Take what you know and go after the Romans. Build an empire. Be great. Build up these worlds. Take your army. Get rid of the Romans. You know how the disciples wanted him to get rid of your enemies. You've got the power. Do it. He wouldn't do it. He was not after greatness. He was after goodness. And so I was also impressed that when Mrs. Eddy says in the textbook on 584, 1-8, she indicates day and the definition of day. I looked it up and she says it's the irradiance of capital life, light, the spiritual idea of capital truth and love. And she says, and the evening and the morning were the first day, Genesis 1:5. The objects of time and sense disappear in the illumination of spiritual understanding, and mind measures time according to the good that is unfolded. This unfolding of good is God's day, and there shall be no night there. A day is reckoned according to the good that is unfolded. It's beautiful, isn't it? So therefore, we can see this is the reason why the system is operating, only to bring out the qualities of God good. So we know then, when we look at the glossary, that we see then in the textbook on page 587, line 19, we look up good, and it says God, Spirit, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction. And I will show that when the scientists now begin to define the laws, exactly the same. This is why I wanted to have as a theme this year how that colon, the science of the model of being and the science of Christian Science, as the leading scientists are converging towards this universal and law of God, where, and I'll show you where Davies says the same, that as I said, the law is operating for goodness, and that those laws are omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive. But you see, this is what Mrs. Eddy is showing. That's the impulse of the spiritual on every open thought. And if one is open, whether it is the Harmons that want to help out in business or whether the physicists are making their discoveries, they are beginning to see that the hard currency of the world are values. This, you know, was something that we saw way, way back at the time of Plato. Plato working with his ideational world, and we know that Mrs. Eddy, the people in philosophy have always accused that Mrs. Eddy got her work right from Plato. We know this isn't true. We know that Mrs. Eddy got it directly through revelation, reason, and demonstration. But we know at the time the biblical writers were working in the Bible, along with the first record of creation, that it had an impact in the world. And the impact was, we could see then Plato at about 427 to 347 BC, and we know him as a pupil of Socrates, and of course we know he was an aristocratic Athenian and the founder of the first college, the Academy, in 388 BC. And we know him as a first great systematic political theorist. And in his book, The Republic, we see that he is dealing with qualities, the meaning and implication of these qualities. His whole point is about justice as opposed to injustice. But he makes this distinction. He says that there is a distinction between human beings on what part of the soul was dominant in their character. And he lists three elements of the soul, the appetite, courage, and reason. And they were related to the class and function in a state. And he said, therefore, if appetite was the most prevalent within one, one would be in the laboring class. Or if courage was the quality, one would be a warrior. If reason was the quality, one would be a ruler. And he showed then that the relationship between the individual and the state, that he said that the individual was more important than society, and that it must know the nature of the individuals in order to ascertain the characteristics of a good society. For example, he said, good people equal a good state, corrupt people equal a corrupt state. And then just carrying it to the end, tying his whole point together just so we get not take it out of context. He said then that the classification of the individuals as to their virtual class duties according to what part of the soul, as I already mentioned, or psychological trait, he said, was dominant. How the psychological traits depended upon the major biological traits. This is how he showed it. We just naturally, we're not teaching Plato, but it's interesting to see where he's coming from. He therefore said the biological trait determined the psychological trait. That's the opposite as Mrs. Eddy showed. She showed the psychological trait controlled the biological, but anyhow, this is Plato. He said if the biological trait that was dominant was the stomach, then the psychological trait would be appetite, the virtue would be moderation, the class would be a laborer, and the duty an artisan. If the biological trait dominant was the heart, the psychological trait would be courage, the virtue would be courage, the class would be a warrior, and the duty would be to protect the state. If the biological trait dominant was the head, the psychological trait would be reason, the virtue would be wisdom, the class would be ruler, and the duty would be government. To show that he also put great emphasis on qualities, you see, and that the most important thing, again, in one's life was what type of quality, what was the nature of man. And this is, as we see Mrs. Eddy showing in her subject, she is giving us a science of reality values, which are translating themselves to every single point in existence, retranslating everything out to be like those reality values. That's why there's healing, because those reality values come and overturn all the physical values and even moral values. She says it overcomes even the gold of human character, because it's human, finally just leaving the spiritual qualities.